Today, I'm joined by Sarah Rogerson. She is the director of the Immigration Law Clinic at the Albany Law School. She was also part of the team that represented Kanimo Nagorin, a local man who had been held in ICE custody for the past 6 weeks and was just released on Tuesday. Sarah, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks for having me.
On Wednesday, there was a heartfelt welcome home for Kanimo Nagorin. Before he was released, we spoke to Kanimo's wife, Lisa. But can you remind us of his story and tell us about Kanimo Nagorin's case from a more legal standpoint?
Sure. He came to the United States over a decade ago, we believe through Philadelphia. The thing about immigration is that it's very opaque, and they don't provide immigrants with the documentation that they've accumulated over the years. And so part of what we're doing is piecing together the puzzle of Kanimo's case. But we do know that he was fleeing unrest in his home country. We believe that he articulated what's called a credible fear when he arrived here, which is the beginning of the asylum process. And then his asylum case wound through the system over a series of years, and it gets very fuzzy as to what happened to that claim. He finds his way up to the Capital District. He started actually working in the Bowery Mission in New York City. So he's been working to feed the homeless this whole time. He wound his way up to Albany, and as is the story for many immigrant families, he meets somebody, they fall in love, and they start a family together. And his wife, Lisa, was a big part of his immigration story because once they were married, there were other avenues of immigration relief available to him. A lot of people think that's automatic. You marry a U.S. citizen and you're in. But that's not how it works. And it's certainly not how it worked for Kanimo because immigration sat on their application for about 2 years. Those applications are supposed to be adjudicated pretty quickly, and his wasn't. And unfortunately for him and for the community, when he went to present himself to immigration, which he was required to do a periodic check-in without warning, they snatched him up and sent him 4 hours away. So that's when we engaged.
And does that typically happen that, you know, you go in for a check-in, you've been going in for your check-ins, and then all of a sudden, what happens in that moment where they decide, we need to detain you now? Do you understand what changes with ICE in that moment?
No, and it happens a lot, and it's happening with increasing frequency. And that's why two of the lawyers on our team actually are specializing in what they call guerrilla habeas. Habeas is a legal term for basically the body. You're trying to make sure that somebody's body is where it's supposed to be and that it's not in the custody of the state. So it's usually a surprise to these individuals when this happens. Hardly anybody knows that they're going to be picked up. And that's why a lot of community groups have come around these accompaniment programs to make sure that there are eyes and ears around when folks go to their check-in to observe what happens. But that's all that can be done. Kanimo checked in with his minister and his attorney. He was separated from them. They were told they were no longer involved in the process, and he was taken to a separate room. This happens all the time. And as I said, every day with increasing frequency, where people are just disappeared from our community.
Scary. You rallied a team to represent Kanimo. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah. So increasingly, immigration lawyers are getting more and more well connected to each other. I think it's one of those when crisis hits and when it's been hitting for so long, it's like every 3 months we have another immigration crisis. We all know each other. I've worked with my friend Camille Mackler at the New York Immigration Coalition to network the state. And when something like this happens, we have listservs that we can send out to and say, hey, does anybody specialize? This is what we know about the case. This is where it's going to be venued. Is there anybody who has time to pitch in? Cases like Kanimo's are so intricate and complicated that you really need at least 5 lawyers, which seems bizarre and crazy, but that's the way it is. So we had a team of 2, Gregory Copeland and Sarah Gilman from New Sanctuary Coalition Community Defense. They're a new group, a new nonprofit who have really, like I said, taken on these guerrilla habeas cases. On their way back from Kanimo's case last week, they actually ended up filing a petition from their car using their hotspot, had a telephonic appearance, and ended up getting their client pulled off of a plane where he was about to be deported. Because Kanimo was detained in Batavia, the Western District of New York had jurisdiction over his case. So Gregory and Sarah are in the Southern District of New York because they're New York City based. So I called up Nicole Hallett at Buffalo Law School in January when he was detained. And so that's right around when clinics are selecting their cases for the students. And then my students worked on the stuff that gets processed here in the Latham USCIS office, Citizenship and Immigration Services. And that's his visa application and all the other applications that go with it. That's the team, and that's how it sort of sorted itself out. And then we had local counsel, Fred Korkos, who had been representing Kanemo this whole time, getting his employment documents squared away, filed the initial application on behalf of Kanemo and Lisa, and was, like, waiting for immigration to process it. When you put it all together and you see, like, 6 lawyers and 8 law students, how does it take that much, never mind the thousands of community members that were involved? I mean, we had a petition that circulated through ICE Free Capital District, and it received over 2,000 signatures. That's insane. And to have the support of city government and county government and the New York State Legislature, and then the lieutenant governor is at the press conference. Not every single case gets that kind of attention, which is really too bad that that's what's required in order to successfully navigate the immigration system. That's how crazy it is.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the widespread support. That brought a lot of attention to this case, one of them being Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple. He called for immigration reform, saying that this story should be a call for that. What is he talking about? What would that reform look like?
Yeah, so the sheriff actually is one of the heroes of this story. He arranges for donations of food to the Capital City Rescue Mission. So he was calling Perry, the director of the mission, just to arrange a food drop-off, and that's when he found out about Kanemo's case. One thing is, you know, getting rid of mandatory detention. There are circumstances under which people are required to be detained, and it has nothing to do whether they're violent or nonviolent. It doesn't have to do with whether they broke any criminal laws. It's typically for certain civil violations of our immigration laws, and they're stuck in detention. And then you have the conditions in these detention facilities. You have private companies running detention facilities, and immigration officers are civilians. They're civil law enforcement officers. They're not trained like police officers, and there are lots of problems with the police, right? We can hold both of these truths together, but the sheriff has tried to create this culture, even in the jail, where it's kind of a tough sell because of our criminal justice system and the way that even people who work within that system are conditioned by the work to be less than compassionate. But now I'm getting into criminal justice reform. And when we do talk about immigration reform, we have to talk about criminal justice reform, because part of those systems link together in really damaging and dangerous ways. So the detention conditions and the mandatory detention policies are an easy win. I mean, they're expensive. It costs a lot of money to house people. It's unnecessary, and they could be out pursuing lawful immigration status, and you shouldn't have to wait in detention. Our immigration system was built on, frankly, racist policies from the very beginning. I mean, we've always, some of the earliest laws, you talk about the Chinese Exclusion Act, literally, categorically excluding people from citizenship. So comprehensive immigration reform is really going to involve changing the very roots of a system that's designed to exclude the quote-unquote undesirables of the day. I read an article this morning that says that they're going to freeze the training of immigration judges and stop hiring them. That's the actual opposite reform that we're looking for. More judges, more asylum officers, more resources dedicated not towards punishment, towards allowing children to die in immigration detention, towards arming an untrained civilian force to snatch people off of our streets, but arming the system that is in place, the system of laws that allow people to process through the immigration, through the legal way, quote unquote. Why aren't we staffing up those systems and processes? Like I said, judges, mental health professionals, asylum officers, visa processors. You know, these are all civil servants who are trying to do their best, and they've got a crushing, crushing workload. There are immigration judges that are just walking off the bench. So we're a long ways off. Immigration is obviously politically charged. We're not in a friendly political environment for immigration reform. And unfortunately, the political winds really have to change in order for that to be meaningful. On the local level, I think what the sheriff is talking about is slowing down or resisting cooperation with immigration officials whenever possible and at whatever turn possible. We currently have in New York State a bill pending called the Protect Our Courts Act that would limit ICE's access to any state courthouses so that victims, when they're going to seek an order of protection in family court, aren't picked up if they're undocumented. Things like that. There are little things that can be done.
You know, we've talked to Delilah Yeend, and I assume her case and Kanimo Nagoran's case are sort of the exception to the rule. What do you know numbers here in the capital region about people detained and people who are then not released?
Well, it's harder for us to get detained numbers from Batavia. It's not transparent whatsoever. In Albany County, right now it hovers around 3 to 5 people. Not asylum seekers generally. Those are folks who are picked up locally for immigration violations. I don't know how much longer that's going to last in terms of that being an option. But last summer, we ended up, you know, we had over 350 folks. Those have all been, all of those people were processed. They all saw lawyers, and over 90% of them passed their credible fear interview as a result of being connected to lawyers, and none of them are left at the jail. It's harder to wrap our arms around the full population. There are a couple of other local jails. We have no idea the numbers in Rensselaer County. We know people are being held in Rensselaer County, but that information has not been forthcoming.
Just to end, what happens with Kanimo Nagoran now?
Kanimo has an ankle monitor, and he's being monitored daily by immigration, which we believe is totally unnecessary. And we're working on his visa application process. There's a lot that's involved. He has a lot of hurdles left. He's going to need almost every single member of his legal team for the foreseeable future until we're successful in getting him a green card and on the path to citizenship.